Hello and welcome to the We're Not Experts History Podcast. I'm James and I'd like to introduce you to a well-researched and fascinating podcast, but you can't have everything. This episode is brought to you by Sarah. Hello, Sarah.
Hello. How are you?
And as you are, I shall let you know at the end of this.
If you're still awake.
Well, while you introduce this to our listener, I'm going to settle in for a nap.
Very funny. No, I think you might find this one interesting, potentially.
Well, because
it's a bit of a grim topic, your favourites.
Thanks.
So on the previous episode, I talked about the workhouse, the history of the workhouse.
You did?
I did.
Remember it well.
Oh, so it couldn't have been that bad if you remember, or do you remember it because it was so bad?
It was a plane, I think.
So by all means, if you haven't listened to that already, definitely check that out. But just to recap, I won't go into all the details, but in the last podcast, I mainly talked about what workhouses were, why they were built, the laws surrounding, like the poor laws, all that kind of stuff. But I didn't talk about what life was like in the workhouse. I didn't want the podcast to be too long. So I decided to save that for another episode, which is today. So, life in the workhouse. So what was it actually like? This is what we're talking about today, or what I'm talking about today.
I thought you were asking me. I had no idea.
Well, your ancestors might have had an idea. I know I definitely had ancestors in the workhouse, which is quite sad, but...
That's a moth. Excuse me?
Sorry, I just picked a bit of... I thought it was a bit of fluff on my desk, and it's just started... It's actually a moth. Sorry about that. I got completely distracted. I think it's half dead. Oh, poor thing. Anyway, sorry, Mr. Moth, right? You just... Yeah.
Well, I'm afraid we haven't got time for you to give it mouth to mouth. So,
yeah, I'll carry on with the podcast. All right then. Okay. So, first of all, why would you go to the workhouse? Why would anyone in their right mind go to the workhouse? Well, to put it simply, it was an absolute last resort. As I kind of briefly touched on in the last, not briefly touched on, as I discussed in the last episode, when all these new poor laws came into force, the workhouse was really the only option for people that were poor. They weren't kind of giving outside support. They were trying to discourage that. And the idea was, if you needed help, you had to be so desperate you would go to the workhouse. This was for people that no job, no money, nowhere to live, no family to support. It could be orphans. It could be even elderly people with no relatives to look after them.
Yeah, when you say no family to support, you mean there was no family to support you rather than you didn't have a family to support?
Yes, I should have clarified that. That's what I meant. To be honest as well, you in other cases, you might have a family to support and no means to support them, and in which case the whole family would go to the workhouse. But more about that.
Took them in, really,
yeah. So we're talking rock bottom. So, yeah, really, really down on your luck. There was a catch. It was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. And the idea was to make it just unpleasant enough so that no one would choose it unless they absolutely had to, unless they were desperate. They didn't want people turning up for a free meal and a bed and then toddling off the next morning and then coming back. Wanted it to be, just absolute last resort.
Let's build a massive place full of beds and give people menial jobs to do, but we don't want them to come here. So we'll spend this money, but we don't want people to use it.
We really don't want people to use it. That was the general idea. So in short, people went to the workhouse not because they wanted to, because life gave them no other option. So not the best circumstances. Now, how did you actually apply, or, you know, did you just walk in? Was it like a walk in, a drop in? Not really. You didn't just stroll in like it was a soup kitchen with beds. There was a little procedure that you had to follow. Because the system wanted to make sure that you were actually desperate enough to qualify, and that you weren't just trying to get a free meal and a free bed. So the application, step one, you had the application. You or a family member, if you weren't able, or someone on your behalf, would apply to the local board of guardians. Now, these were the people in charge of Poor Relief. And they would check your situation just to make sure you weren't fibbing. I don't know why anyone would fib and pretend that they needed to be in the workhouse when they didn't need to be in the workhouse, because it was really grim. It really, really was grim. I can't emphasise that enough.
Why would you do it otherwise? Unless you're a journalist and you just want to experience it, I can't see why else you would volunteer to go in there.
No. So they would obviously make sure that, you know, you weren't just being lazy or just trying to dodge work. It was kind of like a means test as well. They would also check to make sure you owned nothing of significant value that could be sold. So even the shoes off your feet, if you had a decent pair of shoes, they'd go, well, no, you can sell them and buy yourself some food. That was how brutal it was. Now, if you were lucky enough, and I say that in inverted commas, to be approved, you would be admitted into the workhouse. So kind of like, imagine the worst B&B you can, I can't even. And you can't really check out. If you turned up to an Airbnb and it was awful, you'd go, right, I'm off and I'm going to complain. I'm going to get my money back. Not the case here. Once you've been admitted, you'd arrive, you'd be stripped and washed, and you'd be given a uniform, because you weren't allowed to wear your own clothes in the workhouse. No. All your belongings, everything, absolutely everything, would be taken from you and put into storage. Or if they felt that the stuff wasn't worth keeping, like if you had some old rags or whatever, they would throw them away. Where was I? Yeah, so stripped, given it, basically, yeah. given a uniform. If you were in a family, so if there was a family, they would be separated. So the men and the women and the children were all sent to different areas. Families did not stay together in the workhouse. And I think that is the main part. And just, I won't go into a tangent, but I did some research on my own family history. And I actually felt really, really sad because my 4 or 5 times great grandparents on one of the lines, they actually spent at least the last decade of their lives in two separate workhouses, and they both died within a year or two of each other, in two different workhouses. One of them I managed to find his grave. I didn't physically go to the grave, I just found out, but he was buried in a mass pauper's grave in somewhere in London. But it just made me really sad because I thought, oh, you know, they get to their sort of retirement and they spent at least the last 10 years of their lives, they were separated, and it just, oh, I don't know, it's horrible. But that was one of the worst things, I think, was that families would go in and they would be divided. Not good. Could you leave if you hated it? You could technically leave. It wasn't a prison, believe it or not. There weren't guards, it wasn't locked as such, but you had to apply to leave. You couldn't just walk out. If you did just walk out, you could actually be charged for theft because you'd be wearing the uniform. So they could actually hunt you down, and they would charge you with theft of the uniform. So you'd have to give 24 hours notice. And this was called self-discharge or discharging oneself. But there were strings attached to this. There was a 24-hour rule for a start, so you couldn't just pop out and go and have a quick pint and come back. Once you gave your notice, you were out. And if you came back and you frequently did this, you could actually get yourself blacklisted and they wouldn't let you in. And again, we see it. I mean, obviously the hospitals can't turn people away, but we call them, they would have referred to them as repeat offenders. Today we'd say, oh, frequent flyers. Yeah. And we used to get them in A&E a lot. You'd get the same characters every week would turn up with the same thing and you'd be like, oh God, here we go. But you couldn't, back then they could actually blacklist people and they could say, right, you're not coming in anymore. You know, you keep turning up.
Potentially closing a loophole.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So going back to applying to self-discharge, if you lived with dependents, so if you have children, you might have to attend a meeting with the Board of Guardians just to convince them that you were capable of caring for said children. Because they wouldn't just let you out with a bunch of kids if you couldn't prove I can take care of myself and I can take care of my children. The thing is, once you'd been in the workhouse, it wasn't really easy afterwards. There was a lot of shame associated with the workhouse. And once you left, you were re-entering a world where you'd be branded as a former inmate, a bit like someone that's got a prison record. I know generally, you know, it's a lot more lenient now than it would have been, but there is still a stigma attached. And if you're applying for a job and you have to obviously disclose, oh, I've been inside for the last 10 years or whatever, there is that stigma. You know, people are suspicious of you. You know, you're a bit dodgy, and it would have been the same with the workhouse. It would have been exactly the same thing. So even if you managed to get out of the workhouse, trying to get a job, get housing, get any support, it was much harder to come by because you had that kind of stigma hanging over you that you were an ex-inmate, almost like an ex-con. And a lot of people would leave the workhouse and return in a worse state because they wouldn't be able to support themselves, which is really sad to think of. If you were a child, you obviously couldn't leave on your own. You would have had to have been signed out by a member of your family or a guardian of some sort. And if you were elderly or unwell, you might not have anywhere else to go. So even if you did manage to persuade them to let you out, you had nowhere to go. So the biggest barrier wasn't really being allowed to leave because you were allowed to leave. But for a lot of people, it was a case of the workhouse was their only option. And it was kind of like, well, it would be like escaping a lifeboat into a shark-infested sea, pretty much.
Yeah, I suppose you're in there doing whatever menial tasks they're getting you to do. They're not paying you. You're just earning the roof over your head and whatever bland food.
Exactly. So it's not like you can even save up money to help yourself when you get out. You're basically leaving with nothing.
You're leaving what you went in with.
Yeah. But it's not as if, you can't sort of better you. It's not like nowadays when people are in prison, and I think this is a great thing, but they give prisoners options to earn degrees, to study, to qualify. So when they do get released, they can become a productive member of society. They've got the support then. I think that's great. But it was different with this. It was kind of like, if you did decide to leave, it was, oh, off you go, and off you went. No support, nothing, no aftercare, no parole officer, you know, helping you to get a job and setting you up with a flat. It was, you were on your own. Pretty sorry state of affairs, really, to get into that situation. Now, there were all different types of people that would have lived in the workhouse. The main residents, there would be a lot of elderly people that were unable to work. Yeah. There was no such thing as a pension, going back to Victorian times. That came along later.
Is there such thing as a pension now?
Well, there is at this current moment, but by the time we retire, who knows what's going to happen.
We'll have to hope we can earn a few pennies off of this, or we'll have to record this in a workhouse.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Sorry, I just paused there to have a drink. Just at the thought of that, I had to have a swig of me drink. Where was I? Elderly. So yes, pension. So if you had no children or grandchildren that you could kind of sponge off of, you went into the workhouse. People that were sick or disabled, you didn't get sick pay and you didn't get disability allowance and all of that stuff. So if you were unable to work, whether it was temporary or permanently, you'd have no money coming in. So workhouse would be an option. Orphans and abandoned children.
Famous sick and disabled. The first person I think of when I think of people who've gone into the workhouse is Joseph Merrick, the Elephant Man. He ended up in a workhouse.
Really? I didn't actually know that.
He couldn't. He would try to go door to door to sell things, but because people would see his appearance, they wouldn't buy things. They'd be repulsed. So he ended up having to go into a workhouse.
I didn't know that about him. I obviously knew of him. Charlie Chaplin spent a lot of his time in the workhouse.
Okay.
Yeah, as a child. His mother and him and his brother, I think his brother's name was Sidney, that would have been in... So I'd already heard this somewhere, but I actually was doing some research for a client, and her grandmother was admitted to the workhouse. Her great-grandmother was admitted to the workhouse. I think it was around 1897 or somewhere around that. And she was admitted the same day that Charlie Chaplin and his mother and brother were admitted to the same workhouse. Wow. Began with L... It was in London.
Not going for all the places in London, I think. It was beginning with L.
Yeah. Oh, it's really annoying. No. It was... Yeah. Oh, that's really annoying. Oh, I might have to Google that in a minute. But anyway, and I actually saw the paper, like the admission for him and his mother and brother. It was really interesting. And I was quite curious because I remember saying to my client, oh, what your great-grandmother... she may even have known, Lambeth.
Lambeth.
Yes, I think it was Lambeth. I'm sure it was Lambeth Workhouse.
Well, grandmother, probably. It depends how old they were, because if they were in as children, they might have been in the same area. But if she was considered an adult, so probably from the age of 12 or 13, she wouldn't have been in the same part as Chaplin if he was a child.
No, I mean, she probably would have been in with his mother. She actually went in because she was pregnant. She was admitted and she had a baby in the workhouse. She was an unmarried mother.
Shame of it.
I know. Well, I'll say something about that in a bit. Well, funnily enough, after orphans and abandoned children, that was another single mother's. Because if you were a single mother, particularly in Victorian times, unless you had a very understanding family, you generally were just left to fend for yourself. And most, and classic example, my client's great grandmother, she was admitted to the workhouse, and that is where she had her child. And I found the birth record for my client's grandmother, and it actually says on the Lambeth Workhouse was her place of birth. It was quite and the lady didn't know any of this history. She knew obviously that her great grandmother had given birth out of wedlock. She was aware of that, but she didn't know it had been in the workhouse, so that was quite interesting. Anyway, I'm digressing. Single mothers, either single mothers or pregnant women would go to the workhouse. And even you had your able-bodied but unemployed adults, so people that could technically work but weren't working for whatever reason. Quite a mixed bag. But it was really the last stop before destitution. It was the last resort. So
yeah, you've got nothing else.
That's the only option. Mm. So
what were they doing in the workhouse?
Well, a typical daily routine. I'll talk you through a daily routine. So about between 5 and 6, it would be rise and shine. So when I say rise and shine, I mean shuffle out of your hard, lumpy bed to start another day of drudgery. So they'd have wake-up bells that would ring, and you'd be up. You'd be washed, cold water, of course, no power showers, and dressed in your lovely uniform. Breakfast was typically freshly roasted coffee, croissants, a full English. No, I'm joking. It would normally be like a watery porridge and I doubt you'd get both, bread, like a very sort of dense bread, like a brick.
Yeah.
Between 7 right up till about 12 noon, you would work. So depending on your abilities, work could be, I mean, I'll talk more about different tasks in a bit, but it could be things like breaking stones, picking oakum, laundry. Children would have to work too. They would often receive some schooling, but they would also have to pull their weight. 12 noon till 1, it would be dinner, which would be more brick bread, and maybe some form of mysterious beige stew, or a potato if you were lucky.
Yeah,
that was dinner. And between 1 and 6 p.m., more work. So you think about it, from 7 a.m. till 6 p.m., they're working. That is a long day. That is almost a 12-hour shift. And I've done those in the past. I've done those, and they are hard. Not good. And it wasn't easy work either. A lot. And again, I'll talk about it more in a bit. But it was hard labour. It wasn't easy. It wasn't as if you were just sitting there doing a bit of, I don't know, light needlework. You were working hard. So that would go on till about 6 p.m. And then between 6 p.m. and 7 p.m., you'd have supper and prayers. Now, supper would just be something light, probably a bit more bread. And then they would have a bit of a hymn singing, maybe a sermon to lift your spirits.
Mm.
That was such a thing were possible. And then between 7 and 8, it would be bedtime, and you wouldn't get hot chocolate or a teddy or tucked in. It would be just straight into bed, your lumpy bed. The dormitories, they were very cold. They were crowded. And I can imagine they would be very smelly and noisy, sharing that space with so many other bodies. So in summary, lots of work, not much food and no fun. But at least on the upside, you were dry, you were fed, kind of, and you weren't dying in a ditch, which for some Victorians would be a silver lining if things were really that bad. So
yeah, I noticed that the food is all bland, but it's probably quite filling.
Well, I think the idea was, and I talk more about it in a bit, but I think the idea was to give you just enough food to stop you from keeling over, but not enough where you would feel full. So you probably were hungry a lot of the time, because I don't think portions were very big. I think they gave you just the bare minimum of food to keep you alive so you didn't die. Because if you were dead, you couldn't do hard labour. So conditions, I mean, I think you probably got a little bit of an idea of what conditions would have been like just from me talking about that. But it was crowded for a start. People would be packed in like sardines, because as much as they didn't want people to use the workhouse, people did. it was a very sad state of affairs, but a lot of people would have been admitted to the workhouse because they had no choice. So you can imagine there would just be lots and lots of bodies all just packed head to toe. You might not even have had a proper bed. It might have just been like a mattress on the floor or something.
It might have just been like a box as well, and it would have just been a row of boxes, and you just were given one. They used to have like DOS houses and things where you would either sleep in a box or you'd be propped up on a bench against the wall, and all you'd have in front of you was a rope, and which you'd have to share. You'd lean on
you'd lean on the rope.
It wasn't built for comfort. It was
some DOS houses didn't even have a bench. It was literally a rope. Just a rope, and you just leant over the rope to take your body weight, and that's how you slept, was just on a rope. I was absolutely shocked when I found out that. I was watching something on YouTube. And do you know another thing, actually, just very quickly, because it was another thing that really shocked me, was they had, because obviously things were so dire, they... coming away from the workhouse slightly, but going to sort of DOS houses or even just sort of rented beds, they actually sometimes would have like a bed sharing system. So say you worked days, you would share a bed, you would do like a bed share with somebody that worked nights. So you would have the bed at night, and then in the morning you'd get up, go to work, and the person that had worked the night shift will come home and get into the bed you'd just left. And they would sleep in it for the day, and then you'd swap. And it would be a complete random stranger. It wouldn't be like family. It would be a complete random stranger. So a bit like today, we have kind of room shares, house shares, but you'd be sharing a bed, literally renting a bed with somebody, and you'd take it in turns to use the bed. And I was just horrified when I read that. I just thought, I can't even... But anyway, that gives you an idea of what life was like. And this is why people were so desperate. And this is why they ended up in workhouses, because that is how desperate times were sometimes. So, you know, we complain about today, but, and I know, don't get me wrong, I'm sure some people have very, very difficult lives. I'm not trying to say that everyone's got a blessed life and everyone's, you know, but yeah, I'm sure we've got it much, much better than what the Victorians had it. But yeah, anyway, I kind of went off track a little bit there. But so conditions, right, we're talking about the dormitories. So yes, very crowded, no privacy, so no curtains. You know, you'd be getting washed, you'd be getting undressed and dressed in front of people. Like, there was no privacy whatsoever. Granted, it was all divided by sex, so you'd have all women together and all men together, so it wasn't as but yeah, still not pleasant, you know. It's not nice to lose your privacy. It would have been smelly, probably lots of lice and things like that. The beds, like you say, if you had a bed, if it wasn't just a box, would be hard and uncomfortable. Thin blankets. I doubt they would have had pillows and things like that. Bathing was rare. If you were lucky, you might get to have a weekly bath, which would be cold, by the way. Not a nice warm soak. It would be a cold bath. And it would be in a shared tub. So that'd fill it up and you'd all take it in turns to have a bath. So can you imagine how disgusting? Because it's not just sharing a tub with your family. Even that's a bit ick. I wouldn't do that with my family. No, people I live with, I wouldn't share that bath water.
No. It's taking me back to a scene in an episode of The Young Ones where they quite clearly share the bath water, and it's basically like they're bathing in mud, and one of them finds an old bicycle dumped in it.
Brilliant. I used to love watching that. I don't remember that episode, but I used to love watching that. Wow. I had the annual. There was like a book I'd written.
Wow.
It's so fun. I think my mum's got it somewhere. I have to ask her, because it wasn't mine. It was hers. I found it in her room and I snuck it out and read it when I was a teenager. But anyway, I'll have to ask if she's still got it.
The Young Ones is an episode. Let's move on.
Yes. Toilets were basic. It would either be an outdoor privy or a communal closet. These, of course, would have been shared and very rarely cleaned, so very smelly. So this
it would have been a bench over a hole in the ground.
Yes.
Yeah.
Basically, or a bucket and chuck it solution.
Yeah, I think we've all been on holiday in France. We get the picture. Let's move on.
Yeah. That's not even a bench, though. That's like a hole in the ground, and you don't even have a bench to sit on. You have to.
Yeah. Bomb aimer's toilet.
A what? Sorry.
Bomb aimer's toilet.
Do you know, I remember being on holiday in France with my parents and my mum and my sister, and we went for the first time. We went to use a bathroom, and we queued for this. And we walked in, and we didn't know what to expect because there was a normal toilet in the hotel, and we just walked in, and it was just a hole in the ground. And I remember we just were like, nope, and we just left. And all the French women were looking at us like, what's your problem? And yeah. Shocking. It's not really shocking. It's actually quite. It's probably a lot cleaner than a toilet seat, to be fair.
Because I don't know, because I imagine if you're using a toilet seat, most of it, if not all of it, ends up where you want it rather than around where you want it.
Yeah, that is true. It depends how good your aim is when you're squatting. But anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, toilets. Yeah, basic toilets. Like you said, a hole in a bench, and very dirty and smelly. Now, this combination of poor ventilation, overcrowding, minimal sanitation, that meant that infections would be absolutely rife. Things like typhus, TB, like, you know, they would have done the rounds quite frequently. So conditions were slightly better than being on the street, but not much, not much. No. And going to the food, now I briefly touched on this, but food in a Victorian workhouse was deliberately basic. And the idea was, like I said, they wanted to keep you alive because you were no good to them if you were dead. They had all the bother of burying you and all of that. So they wanted to keep you alive, but they didn't want you to be too well fed or too comfortable. So food was very, yeah, very basic. So the meals were cheap, they were repetitive, and about as exciting as a damp dishcloth, just not nice. So a typical menu would include the famous gruel. Did I say that right? Gruel.
Yeah.
Pronounced a lure on the end. Which was like a thin grey porridge made from oats and water. Not oats and milk, oats and water. They would have stale bread, boiled meat sometimes, and potatoes. Sometimes there'd be like a vegetable stew or a suet pudding. And when I say a suet pudding, I don't mean like a nice jammy suet pudding like Aunt Bessie makes. It would just be a plain stodgy, fatty
pudding.
Just a lot of stodge. Food was very bland, very flavourless. There was no spice, no flavour. And it wasn't just to cut costs. It was also, again, they didn't want people to enjoy themselves. And they didn't want people to enjoy the food and want to stay in the workhouse. The idea was to discourage it as much as possible and to get you out and making your own way in life. So portions were strictly controlled. You'd be given just enough food, really, to stay alive, but not enough to feel full. And if you complained or if you caused any other mayhem, you could find yourself on punishment rations, which was just bread and water, and that was it. So that was even worse. On rare occasions, like Christmas, so if you were unlucky enough to be in the workhouse at Christmas, you might get a slice of meat or even a plum pudding, but for most inmates, that kind of stuff was like a legend. I don't think that really happened very often.
No. Maybe if there was some rich benefactor donating it, but I can't see the...
it wouldn't have been a regular occurrence. So, as I touched on before, on admission, you're belongings would be taken from you. And I mentioned that you were given a uniform. Yes. Now, the workhouse uniform, it was very plain, very practical, and it was designed to strip away any trace of individuality or pride. You weren't there to look good. You were there to work.
Like school uniform.
Yeah, but even that, you know, I don't know about you, but you'd kind of snazz it up a little bit at school. You know, you'd roll your skirt. Well, not you. Unless you wore a skirt to school. I don't know. But
I never had a leg for it.
I went to a convent school, and our uniform, our uniform was so bad, you'd literally get beaten up on the way home by the other kids, because we had to wear, it was a knee-length skirt and knee-length socks with it, and that was enough to get you beaten up on the way home because it looked so bad. They were even trying to bring back, you know, the boater hats, straw boaters.
Yeah.
They were trying to bring them back when I was at school, and we had to sign a petition to say to them no, because we will get murdered on the way home if we go home in those.
I'd have had so much fun.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, when I was at school, yeah, you'd as soon as you were out of sight of the teachers, you'd roll your skirt up. Do you know, I remember, I have to just share this story because it's so funny. So a couple of friends, they had a really strict, sorry, just jumping back. My school was so strict. They had a policy that even in the hottest summer, you were not allowed to remove your blazer. Because particularly if you were in public, you had to have your blazer on. Because it was seen as disgraceful if you were walking around with no blazer on. Anyway, it was a summer. My friends and I were walking home, and we had rolled our skirts up. We had taken our blazers off, took our ties off. We had our blazer slung over our shoulders, right? I thought we were so cool. And we're going along, and then this car screeched to a halt next to us. It was my science teacher, who was also my form teacher. She jumped out, and she was like, "You put your blazers on and you unroll." And she literally made us roll our skirts down, put our blazers back on, put our ties back. Oh my God, the embarrassment in public, in front of everybody. But we did it. I mean, nowadays, I don't think they would allow such a thing, but oh my God, it was just. But anyway.
I went to school in Basildon, as long as we weren't murdering people, they didn't care.
Honestly, my school, after I left, they actually introduced pleated skirts because to prevent the girls from rolling up their skirts. Because when you've got pleats in a skirt, if you try and roll up a pleated skirt, I'm sure you've tried, it just goes all weird and out of shape. Yeah, so my school was very strict.
Uniform.
So I kind of, what I'm trying to say is that I know how these people felt. I know, I understand. I'm joking. Can't compare my experience to this. But anyway, so going back to uniform, women and girls, they would wear, it would be like a coarse cotton dress or gown. And do you know what's funny is that when you say cotton, see nowadays, if you buy something that's pure cotton, you think, oh, it's quite nice, because everything now is made of like nylon and lycra and stuff, whereas a pure cotton t-shirt, you know, you pay a lot of money for that. But back then, that would have been par for the course. That, you know, everybody would have just worn plain cotton or wool. Even wool's expensive now, isn't it? If you get a pure wool outfit, like a wool jumper, costs a lot of money. But they didn't have acrylic materials and things then, so yeah, they would have been in either a cotton dress or gown, no patterns, no florals, nothing pretty. They would normally have a white apron just to cover their clothes while they were working, because generally work would be quite messy, you know, things like laundry, cleaning. And they would have a cap or a bonnet to cover their hair. And on their feet, they would be given heavy shoes or boots, and not comfortable, just enough to cover their feet. Now, in some institutions, particularly those in Bristol, for some reason, I don't know why Bristol had such an issue, but unmarried mothers and were required to wear a red dress to signify that you were an unmarried mother. And prostitutes had to wear yellow to distinguish them from other inmates. And it was designed, it was this practice. Now, you can't imagine it now, but this practice was designed to publicly shame these women and to remind them of their perceived moral failings. So by making them wear a different colour to everybody else, it was a way of saying, right, you're bad, like you're morally wrong. And awful. Yeah, absolutely awful.
I just assumed it's so you knew which ones you were chatting up.
Mm. That as well, but mainly to make you feel bad. That was the main thing.
Yeah.
Men and boys, they would wear a rough jacket and trousers. That would normally be made from thick wool or serge, and also in uninspiring colours. So, you know, greys and greens. And I mean, I like green, but it was probably like a horrible muddy green. It wouldn't be a nice green.
Grey, black.
Do you know what? This moth is still alive. He's still wandering around my desk.
Well, kill it and get on with it.
I'm not going to kill him. Oh, that's a little life there, but his wing's busted.
Well, then that's the end of his life.
Yeah, I know, but I don't want to. He might be all right. Anyway.
He's either going for a sympathy vote or his time is up.
Yeah, probably. He probably wants to be on the podcast, so he's waiting for his chance.
Unfortunately for him, I'll be editing it.
Oh, poor little moth. Anyway, right, where am I? So rough jacket and trousers, made with thick wool or serge. They'd have a shirt, sometimes a waistcoat, as well as a cloth cap. Work boots and clogs. It's funny when you say waistcoats and things like that nowadays, you'd think, oh, that's really sort of, you know, that's fancy, like wearing a waistcoat and a jacket. But that was just their normal standard of dress, same as a hat. You know, you didn't go out without a hat back in those days. And it's really curious, not curious, sorry, it's really fun to see when you do occasionally come across on YouTube the old footage of Victorian times, and you see them, and every single person is wearing a hat.
Some sort of hat of some description,
And it was, and I remember reading, it was an autobiography by a lady that had grown up in the East End of London. She was born in 1920, so you know, a little bit later on, but she, because even then, you know, they still would have worn hats. And she actually said that going out without a hat, it was the equivalent of going out with no underwear on. It was really essential that you wore a hat when you went out, because it was morally, socially wrong to go out without a hat on. So, and now people go to Tesco in their pyjamas. So, you know, we've really come down as a society, I must say. But anyway, I have never gone to Tesco in my pyjamas. I'd just like to say that. I've never done it.
Whose pyjamas were you wearing?
Dave's.
Yeah.
Yeah, you caught me there. but anyway. Yes, so men. So what we can say about the uniform is that it was shapeless, it was bleak, it was very dull, and it was a statement. It was a way of saying you are part of the system. You're not a person. You're part of a system. Quite sad, really. So going to work, obviously, I've said multiple times that it was, you know, hard labour. Now, here are a few examples of the jobs that you might be expected to do if you went to the workhouse. So, welcome to the workhouse. Here are the job opportunities. You tell me which one you'd like to do. So, we've got stone breaking. So if you're strong and you like smashing things while crying, this job is perfect for you. I don't know what the purpose of this job is. I'm sure there'd be a reason for just smashing stones.
No.
But
well, a lot of the time it wasn't. It was just to keep people
People out of trouble. But it was noisy, yeah. It was repetitive, and it would tire you out. So I guess it was a way, yeah, like you say, it was keeping you out of trouble, because if you were doing that, you weren't causing mayhem.
Yeah, I don't like the sound of that one.
No.
I work in an office.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, so I don't think we've got any office jobs available. Now, we have got oakum picking. So this is a workhouse favourite. A lot of people do this. So you just need to pick apart bits of old rope just using your fingers. And you get bonus points if your hands are already cut to pieces. So oakum, in case you're wondering, oakum was used to seal ship planks. But I think its main purpose was to just keep inmates quietly miserable for hours on end. Do you want to do that?
No, again, I don't understand that. No. I'm far too delicate, as you know.
Laundry work. So scrub, rinse, wring and repeat. So, if you like standing in freezing water and handling other people's soiled undergarments, you can have this glamorous role in the wash house. Mm. Any good?
I'm going to guess, bear in mind, this is in the Victorian era and before, I'm going to guess that would have been restricted to women.
Probably, yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
I'm just giving you all the options here, okay? Now, kitchen duty, again, it's probably, again, like you say, a women's job, but peeling potatoes, stirring the mystery stew. You might get to smell some if you're lucky. No good. Cleaning and scrubbing, again, probably a women's job. Just endless sweeping and scrubbing. No good. Sewing and mending. This actually definitely was mostly assigned to women. So the men may have done some of the other work, but
yeah, they were quite physical stuff. Then.
Yeah, they would probably more do the stone breaking and maybe the oaken picking. But I imagine as well that if you were an elderly gentleman or you were unwell and you couldn't physically do these heavy jobs, you might get lighter, you know, like a kitchen duty, like chopping a few potatoes or something. I don't know. Sewing and mending, that was mostly assigned to women, so you can't have this job. So you'd be stitching the workhouse uniforms, repairing worn out clothes, darning socks, those sorts of thing. And of course we had child labour. So children were given age appropriate tasks. I say that loosely. Things like carrying heavy buckets, cleaning chimneys. They loved shoving kids up chimneys back then. Or working in the laundry. So yeah, even kids didn't get away with it. Now, all of this was done under the watchful eye of the workhouse master, more about him later, who may or may not have been a fan of Joy. He probably wasn't. Breaks were rare. I very much doubt you would have got a break. Smiles were rarer still. And complaints, yeah, just don't complain, because you'll end up on bread and water rations. So
I don't think I'm going to get on in the workhouse. I do think, though, that I'll have to join Detective Merrick in the sideshow.
Yeah, just do that instead. Might be easier.
People talking and vomiting. I'm used to it.
Yeah, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Were there any rules? That was going to be your next question, wasn't it? Are there any rules? Were there any rules? Say that again.
Yeah. Were there any rules?
Do you know, your mic, I don't know if it's your mic or it's my earphones, but your mic kind of dipped. What did you say the first time? Say that again.
I was going to ask how much longer this was going to go on for.
I thought you said that. You rude man. Yes, we still have a little way to go. I thought you'd be riveted by this. It's interesting.
I'm just trying to think what our listener will be asking.
Okay. Were there any rules? There were. there were lots of rules. It wasn't the workhouse or the idea of the workhouse. It wasn't just a roof over your head. It was a moral boot camp. See, the what's the word? The I can't think of the word. My brain's just gone to sleep. But the general feeling around poverty was that poverty was caused by poverty was seen as something to be ashamed of, and it could be corrected through discipline and obedience. Obviously, now we have a much broader view and we look at people's circumstances and we can say, oh, you know, that they're in poverty because they, you know, they're disabled or this or that. But back then, if you were in poverty, it was your fault. You had failed.
It sounded like they assumed that it was of your own making. You were probably lazy.
And it was so almost as if people were choosing to be poor just so they had to be supported. Who would choose this? Seriously, who would choose this? Let's be real. But with this attitude, that was the word I was looking for, the attitude around poverty. I couldn't think of it. But because they really believed that they could correct people, they had a lot of rules in the workhouse. And I mean, there were so many. I'm not even going to go through them all. But the main ones were things like silence. No talking. You know, it wasn't a social thing being in the workhouse. You didn't talk while you had your meals. You weren't to chat in the dorm. It was kind of like living in a library. And when I say that, I'm talking about the libraries, how they used to be. Libraries are not the same anymore. Have you noticed when you go to the library, it's bloody loud.
Yeah, I want people to shut up.
Yeah.
That's why they go in there.
Yeah, I was in the library the other day. I was having a meeting with one of my colleagues and there was some kind of group going on, and they were all singing bloody nursery. And I thought, what the hell? I sound awful. But the thing is, I go to the library to work and to research, and I like peace and quiet, but it is louder than it is in my house. In the library. So things have definitely changed. So when I say it was like living in a library, I'm talking about a library as a library used to be, not as a library today. Libraries today are like a whole different thing. They're not libraries. Anyway, that I'm not going to go into that. But yeah. So yeah, it was like living in a library without the books. And
I'm
my prison guards.
Into that today, just having you gone into it.
But anyway, no fraternising, that was another rule. So couples were obviously separated. No hanky-panky was allowed. Not that the dorms were a very nice place for any kind of romance, but... And you...
Some of us have to take all we can get.
Yeah. Obey without question. So any orders from staff were made to be followed instantly. No resistance, no question. If you did question anything, that meant consequences. So yes, the whole bread and water punishment thing. No alcohol and bad behaviour. So they didn't have karaoke nights or anything like that.
I like no karaoke rule. I like that.
Yeah, I think that's a very good rule, to be fair.
Yeah.
Cleanliness equaled godliness. So personal hygiene was very, very important. And even though the sanitation wasn't great, you know, everybody lived in very close quarters, disease was rife, you were still expected to keep yourself presentable. So yeah, just everything had to be clean, your uniforms, your dormitory. They were very, very particular about that. And if you did step out of line, you would be dealt with swiftly and often with a heavy-handed sense of justice. So Yeah, the main thing they used to punish people with was food. So they would put them on bread and water rations. Solitary confinement. So if you were causing a ruckus, they would put you in solitary confinement, which isn't nice. Or they'd give you extra work as well. So extra stone breaking, more ochre, more misery. In serious cases, now, I don't know what kind of hell you'd have to raise to get kicked out of the workhouse, but you could get kicked out of the workhouse, which was quite a terrifying prospect, because if you were in the workhouse, you were desperate, and there obviously wasn't much for you outside of the workhouse. So if you got kicked out, you were in serious trouble. Now, the rules were there to keep people humble and miserable. Let's face it, they were there to keep you miserable. And I think the idea was that they were trying to get people to just not come back. It didn't work, though, because people frequently did come back because they had no other option. But I'm just wondering what people may have done to get themselves kicked out. I imagine things like maybe fighting or violence, something quite extreme.
Yeah, basically no alcohol. I imagine if drunkenness would be a reason to kick you out.
But how the hell would you get drunk? They won't let you out. Yeah. Anyway. So that's, yeah. Now, one thing that... one thing that is interesting is, were workhouses religious? I don't know if you've ever wondered that. You probably haven't, but pretend that you have. So in a way, yes, workhouses were religious places, because religion and moral discipline in the workhouse, it did play a very important role. It wasn't just about backbreaking labour, although that was a big part of it. It was also a place to cleanse your soul, whether you wanted it cleansed or not. Because where they're very much fixated on this whole moral thing, believing that people were morally corrupt because they were poor, religion was seen as a vital tool in transforming this. So transforming poor people into morally upright, hard-working citizens. And every workhouse had a chapel, and attending services was not optional. You had to go. Whether you attended church outside of the workhouse, whether you were religious, you had to go to chapel. Again, reminds me of school, having to go to mass every week, whether you wanted to or not. Friday mass, you had to go. And then you had to go and confess your sins to the priest at the end, whether you wanted to or not. But anyway, I think my school was actually a workhouse.
It sounds a bit like it.
Yeah. A lot of this is very much ringing true to me, and it's making me think about my school days, which is quite disturbing. So... as I was saying, every workhouse had a chapel. The local chaplain, so they'd have a chaplain. I mean, I'll talk more about staff in a bit, but they would give a sermon full of fire and brimstone and judgment. And the general vibe was, you're poor because you're lazy, you're sinful. But lucky for you, God forgives eventually. That was kind of like the gist of it. They were very much about, if you were poor, it was your fault and you had to pay for that, which was a really sad state of affairs, but that's just how it was. And as I said before, the whole workhouse system was built on the idea that poverty was a moral failing. So if you were poor, it was your fault and you needed guidance, and moral discipline came in many forms. So segregation was the main one. Men, women and children were kept apart, and even families were split up. And this was apparently to avoid unruly behaviour or, heaven forbid, a bit of human connection.
Disgusting.
Yeah. Going back to the whole silence rules, chit-chat was frowned upon. You were there to work, not gossip. Uniforms and routines, they obviously kept people in the same uniform, in the same routine, because, well, I guess to them it was like personal growth, just enforcing monotony on people. And they were very, very heavy on the punishment. So if you kind of broke any of the rules, you spoke out of turn, or you looked too cheerful, you breathed wrong, you would be punished for that. So when I say religion in the workhouse, it wasn't really about spiritual comfort. It was more about moral correction. So kind of like a spiritual boot camp with cold porridge chucked in. And I think the idea was to just scare all the sin out of you, because they really, really believed that people that were poor, they were sinners. Yeah. Very, very small-minded way of looking at things. I'm glad I don't even mean, you know, I'm not going to get into a religious debate because I'm just not going to do it, but just the whole attitude around poverty then was very, very small-minded. The fact that they really believe that you chose to be poor. Maybe some people did. Maybe some people could have done more to help themselves and they didn't. But a lot of people were in that situation because they had no option, they had no choice. Life had dealt them a hard blow, and yeah, they needed support rather than judgment. But again, luckily we're in different times now, so it's a bit easier. So,
not too good.
No, I think it varies, doesn't it? But the whole idea of religion within the workhouse was to scare the sin out of you, drill in a bit of discipline, and just send you back out into the world a bit holier and ideally a lot less dependent on the parish. But whether that worked, that's debatable. So I'll just talk a little bit about the staffing in the workhouse. So you've got your workhouse master, which is he's essentially the boss, the head teacher, and prison warden, all rolled into one. Now, he would be in charge of day-to-day operations, so keeping the place running, making sure rules were followed, making sure no one enjoyed themselves too much. And this role would often be filled by ex-military men. They would be the most common. And I guess, in a way, you can see why they would suit that role.
Now, you know, that military discipline.
Yes. Then you had a matron. So the matron was a part nurse, part housekeeper, part Victorian dragon. So her role was to run the kitchen, supervise laundry, dish out scoldings to people. Do people say that anymore? Scoldings, to scold somebody. Yeah. It sounds quite old, doesn't it? It sounds a bit Enid Blyton, but anyway. And she would ensure that everything was proper. And it's funny, actually, because now you have what they call the modern matrons at the hospitals, and some of the matrons I've worked under have been modern, but some of them that I've worked, they remind me of these old I mean, we had one matron in one ward I worked on, and she used to go around after we'd done the beds, and she would inspect every single bed, and if you hadn't done hospital corners, she would strip the whole bed, she'd fling it on the floor and go, do it again. Like, I had time for that. But anyway, so I think my job might have been a workhouse as well, because, you know, this is all very familiar to me.
Well, you got yourself there.
I did, but I got myself out, so, you know, hooray to me. Anyway, talking of hospitals, you had a medical officer. Now, this guy, and I say guy because it definitely wouldn't have been a woman, because women were not allowed to be doctors unless they pretended to be men. So this guy would have been in charge of health and well-being. So he would have dealt with injuries, outbreaks, childbirth, general sickness. You had your guardians of the poor. So these were just a group of local bigwigs, so clergymen, businessmen. And they would sit on a board of guardians and they would oversee the whole workhouse system. So they set the rules. They would hold regular meetings. They would obviously decide as well who was worthy of help and who wasn't. So that was the Guardians of the Poor. You had your...
Guardians of the Poor, I think I've seen that film.
Yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy you're thinking about. Not the same. Yeah. Not the same thing. Yeah. No.
No. Moving on.
Schoolmaster or schoolmistress. So as I mentioned before, the children would have had some schooling. They would have worked too, but they would have got a little bit of education. So this would normally just be the basics, like reading, writing. I know sometimes the boys would be taught like practical things like woodworking or carpentry or even like maybe some farming. Girls would be taught, just to enable them. So in a way, the children kind of had it better in a way because they would be taught skills that would benefit them in later life. And the girls would be taught things like, you know, how to take care of a household, how to do needlework, how to do laundry. And these would be things that would help them to
find a husband.
Find a husband or even find employment. Now,
yeah,
I do know sometimes the big houses, if they were looking for staff, they would go to the workhouse and they would say, right, have you got any kids, any sort of, you know, half decent kids I can have, you know, and they would take them and they would give them a job. I guess kids were cheaper to employ and they would get employment as maybe like a scullery maid or, you know, whatever, a boot boy. Is it a boot boy, you know, where...
No, I thought that was football.
No, I'm talking about... So the scullery maid, I think, was like the lowest of the low on the maid side. And then I think... Or was it a hall boy? Something like that. But there's... No. Anyway. But...
I don't know. I let the butler worry about that.
Yeah, leave it to him. He knows what he's doing. So you had other staff as well. There'd be a few behind the scenes workers like cooks, porters, nurses. Nurses, to be fair, would often just be untrained inmates that were just assigned to the infirmary, whether they knew what a fever was or not. They would, you go to the infirmary, you can help over there. So they weren't bad people necessarily. I mean, some of them might have been not very nice, but they were operating in a system that was designed to be harsh. So there wasn't really room to be kind and be nice. So they had to keep things running and they had to keep the poor in their place. That's kind of it, really. That's generally life in the workhouse. Now, did it leave much of an impact? Yes, it did.
Yes.
I think it did.
Next question.
No, I'm going to talk about it. Be quiet. So the workhouse is long gone. But the shadow does linger a bit over our ideas with poverty, welfare and public housing. So at its core, the workhouse system was meant to be a last resort. So a place that was so grim, so soul-destroying that nobody would willingly go there. Unless they were desperate. You know, they were not nice places. Families were torn apart. Lives were controlled by routine and punishment. And the general idea was poverty. Just made a new word.
Poverty
was a moral failure. And if you were poor, it was your fault. You shouldn't expect help because you'd put yourself there. That was the general attitude. And even decades after the last workhouse shut its doors, the very word workhouse still carried a bit of a stink. So for many families, if you had a family member that had been in the workhouse, it was shameful. You'd be ashamed of that. And it would be whispered about or hidden even. And people that had been through the system, sorry?
Or shared in a podcast.
So they're all dead now, they don't care. But people that had been through the system, they would be labelled as failures. They would be treated with suspicion. And I guess as well, it would make them frightened to ask for help ever again. Because they ask for help, that's what you've got. So although the system was very flawed, it did influence future systems. And we did eventually learn, believe it or not, that punishing people for being poor, it doesn't solve poverty. You can't make people, you can't stop poverty by just punishing the poor. It doesn't work. And that things like healthcare, housing and education, they're basic rights, not moral rewards. And most importantly, separating families and stripping people of dignity doesn't help the situation. It just creates more long-term problems. So these lessons, they help to shape the creation of the NHS, the development of council housing, social safety nets, and after the Second World War, the welfare state. So they did bring about a lot of ideas, which, you know, today we can be thankful for, because they wouldn't have existed otherwise.
Yeah, and chances are there would have been people that remember this or witnessed it, thought, well, there's got to be a better way.
Yes. And yeah, it was a very steep learning curve. I mean, obviously, some ideas did stick around, suspicion that people cheat the system. And even today, you know, there's this whole thing about, oh, it shouldn't be too easy to get benefits and all of this. You know, they should make you jump through hoops and there should be strings attached. Because you get all these scroungers and, you know, so I don't think you're ever going to completely get rid of that attitude. But again, that from the workhouse, it's that stigma has outlived the system itself. But at least it's given us a blueprint.
Yeah, a blueprint.
A blueprint. The beer has finally had its effect and I can't talk. A blueprint of what...
When was that, an hour and a quarter ago?
Yeah, of what not to do when caring for the society's most vulnerable. So that was life in the workhouse. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that was, fairly painful, yeah. Certainly hurt me for most of it.
Yeah. Well, at least you're not in the workhouse. What would you rather be doing right now? Would you rather be picking oakum in the workhouse or would you rather be listening... Don't even answer that. I don't think I'll like your answer.
That's what I'd have to think about it, yeah.
Mm. Well,
out of interest, how do you cure poverty?
Sorry?
Out of interest, how do you cure poverty?
Just chuck a load of money at them.
Oh, fair enough. So we end there with some advice for government.
Yeah, just chuck a load of money at them. Anyway.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's our money.
Yeah, that's true. Chuck a little bit of money, a little bit, just a small bit. But so that was my my thing about workhouse. With an interruption from the husband in the middle of it.
That's right, that'll be edited, don't worry.
Yeah. See what you can do with that.
We cut him out. We don't have to name him. He won't get any royalties.
Poor thing. All right. Well, that was that. So I hope you enjoyed that. You probably didn't, but oh well. I made you sit through it anyway.
Made me what?
I made you sit.
Oh, thank God. Oh, okay. Yeah, that was not the time to get a speech impediment.
But anyway, that's the workhouse, everybody. So yeah.
Thank you very much.